From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we move on through the Easter season. Yes, we are still in Easter season. Didn't end on Easter Sunday. We are in the Easter season. And we are pleased to welcome in Jane Lee of God's Heart and Hands Ministry. Jane?
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Not only did we have we come through Lent and Easter, of course, the resurrection.
Yes.
Everything. It used to be our trick question when we were little kids, when we were going to catechism class on Sunday morning. You know, which is bigger, Christmas or Easter?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, as little kids, we thought Christmas was a bigger deal because
right.
we got more stuff
mm-hmm.
than we did on Easter.
Mm-hmm.
And the priest would always say, or sister would always say, oh, it's Easter. You
mm-hmm.
know, and we said, well, you can't have Easter without Christmas. You go, well, that's true. The old chicken and egg thing.
Right.
But as you get older,
mm-hmm.
you realize that we had Christmas to create Easter. You know, I mean, it was like
yes.
Easter was the deal.
Yes.
Christmas just got us. Christmas is on the road to Easter.
And that's a perfect example, I think, of how things look in the world. Like you said, we get more outwardly. We see more outwardly as children, even as adults, from Christmas. And then we need our parents to help us shift it, saying, but it's the spiritual piece.
Sure. And plus,
we needed Christmas.
Yeah.
But Easter is the I can't even think of the big enough word for it. Spiritually, it's so profound.
Plus, Christmas has, not so much when I was a kid, Christmas was very much a religious day. And it
mm-hmm.
wasn't just our family. It was a religious day. It was the,
mm-hmm.
the birth of Jesus Christ, you know, the Lord and Savior. Now it's been overwhelmed with secularism, you know, with presents and
busyness
and
commercialism, materialism,
and a lot of Christmas tunes that have nothing to do with it's not old Little Town of Bethlehem.
And speaking to the emptiness of it, look how early we're starting in the year.
Oh yeah,
it's like we're trying to get more out of less.
We already have Christmas stuff up. It comes right after St. Patrick's Day.
Kind of does. Yes, it is.
They already have
close.
Green for St. Patrick's Day, so let's just add a few trees in here.
There we go. But that really speaks to like the importance of parents as God's heart and hands. Parents stand between their children and God, and we help our children navigate the world, much like you had to do for your children. And like, no, Christmas is this, but Easter is the spiritual magnificence that we really and we're called to really help our kids navigate that so they don't become too steeped in the
right.
materialism, yet to understand it's an outward expression of what's going on at Christmas, but the inward expression, can we help them dive deeper into the, and it's getting more challenging, I would say, as parents to reach through the commercialism, if you will, the busyness, the songs, the cheer, the sparkle and everything, and to grab the meaning of it and pull that forward.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest things, I think, for God's Heart and Hands Ministry is returning that to the center of the family. Because as the families, as we know, month by month that we go through, we're being taxed by more and more.
Right.
More involvement, more interference, if you will, more voices coming in and telling us what we should do and how we should do it and when we should do it. And so we have to put God back in the center. That's going to be the only way that we can cope with this,
right.
shield ourselves with it. And that's the beauty of our faith, Catholicism. We have the saints. Saint Joseph, terror of demons, pillar of the family life. That's profound.
Yeah.
But as parents, we have to make, it's not casual anymore. You can't be, parenthood is not casual. It's now an overt exercise that has to have discrete thought and purpose and you have to shore it up. You have to find those pieces outside of ourselves. And then Easter, since we've done that, we went through Lent for 40 days and everything we did, we're kind of on a roll. And so it's kind of brewing, and I think it's going to keep going, is continuing our Lenten practices. What really works for us? Look what we did. And the joy that we had on Easter because of it.
Yeah.
And true.
Yeah, the joy we had.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't gotten over, though, seeing the I don't know how we got from Jesus Christ, the death and resurrection, to a bunny with eggs, but we did.
I don't either.
But
yeah.
Once again, in I won't name the store, I saw a chocolate cross. Not good. A crucifix, but a chocolate cross.
Holding ground.
You know, and I'm like, wow.
It's like, wait, but just even in the most subtle ways.
Am I going to eat this thing? Am I going to eat a
certainly not if it's
cross?
If it's a crucifix, that would be very hard. But a cross, you know. Yes, but see, here again, we have to interpret it. We have to interpret it for our children. What do we do? Do we buy it? Do we do that? How do we hold the sacredness of it?
Yeah.
Once again, parenthood is not casual anymore. It's not. We have to think of everything. What is the – and in its own context, separate from everything else, a chocolate cross would remind them of it. But it's a piece of candy, so we would remember that. But then with everything else that's going on, that chocolate cross actually takes on a different connotation. And we parents have to think of that. So by putting God back into the family, mom and dad have to say, we have to start there. And where do we start? I think let's keep the role going of what we did during Lent. The extra prayer practices, right. A little longer at family dinner. Whatever we brought in, whatever we were doing, keep it going. Because the winds are too strong for us to just keep going like it was a year ago, 10 years ago. And so the simplest ways for us to do that is really God made it very simple. And when we look at Divine Mercy Sunday that just passed, when Jesus was talking to Saint Faustina, or then Sister Faustina, Sister Maria Faustina, I guess, and in her diary, in paragraph 1572, he goes through the process of what he expects of her, but then he's very flexible. And I think that really speaks to how loving God is. He says, my daughter, try your best to make the stations of the cross in this hour. He was referring earlier to the 3 o'clock hour, which we now know is Divine Mercy hour, provided that your duties permit it. And if you are not able to make the stations of the cross, then at least step into the chapel for a moment and adore in the Blessed Sacrament my heart, which is full of mercy. And should you be unable to step into the chapel, immerse yourself in prayer there where you happen to be, if only for a very brief moment, a very brief instant.
You know, I've in my mind trying to go this hour, you know, and have said, well, they mean 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. And then I go, no, maybe they mean 2 p.m., the third hour.
Oh.
Jesus on the cross. Oh. Noon to 3.
Right.
Maybe it means 2
the third
o'clock,
hour.
The
it
third
could.
Hour, mm-hmm. as opposed to 3 o'clock.
Right. Right. We've had discussions about that in the church. Right.
But in my mind, it probably doesn't tremendously matter. I mean, if that's not available at that time, well, just do it even for an instant. You
isn't
know?
That glorious?
So
how
yeah.
You did
so
that?
If it's if some people have divined, I use that word not casually, that it's 2 o'clock because it's the third hour. Fine,
right.
And if they've decided it really means 3 o'clock because it's a three.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's fine too.
And then recognizing 3 o'clock happens
it's
all over the world.
It's what you're doing. It's the devotion. It's,
right.
It's not so much the
right.
time.
Right, because he doesn't say in your time zone.
Yeah.
He knows what was coming. He knows with daylight. And then daylight saving time's kicking. So there's a lot of variables.
Does God recognize time zones?
There you go. There you go. He created it all, anticipated it all. But what's marvelous about this is he asks us to do the Stations of the Cross. And then if you can't do that, then adore in the Blessed Sacrament. And then if you can't do that, immerse yourself in prayer. So he's trying to meet us where we are. He's saying, this is really what I want. But if you can't do that, if you're not able, not that you don't want to, but if you're not able, then do this. Well, if that doesn't work, do this. And I think that shows and really speaks to that seek and you shall find, ask and knock and so on.
Right.
So when parents put God back into the center and they do what they are able. He's not asking us to turn our lives upside down, to have stress because of it, and the kid is crying or the kids are sick or whichever. He just says, provided your duties permit it and be wherever you are. Find that sacredness.
Right.
And that's what families need to come back to. And I see the interference of those little magical screens that come in. They interfere in our car. They interfere in our family dinners, they interfere in our house, and so on. We can just start with him. And so it's not a big to-do list, and it's not a big, okay, we don't have to change everything. But when you start with God, which sounds overly simple, but I want to offer that it's tremendously hard, But it's not difficult if we start with him.
If we start with him. And, you know, I've said many times on this program and one-on-one discussions with people, if you ever felt down about anything, or felt down about your relationship with God, felt down about maybe uncomfortable with you and you're not sure what you believe or you've fallen away a little bit, pick up Sister Faustina's diary and just open it. And just read one of the passages, just one, any one of those. Here's the book. We'll do it right now.
Okay. Which paragraph did you hit?
Let's see. We've got.
It's pretty marked up. So.
Okay, let's do it again. Okay. I asked the Lord to have a certain person come to visit me today so that I could see her one more time. And that would be a sign for me that she was being called to the convent, which Jesus is having me establish. And, oh wonder, the person in question came, and I tried to form her a bit spiritually. I began to show her the way of self-denial and sacrifice, which she readily accepted. However, I have placed this whole matter in the hands of the Lord, that he may direct everything according to his good pleasure. So many things you'll see in here where she, her faith... And her talking about the mercy of God, well, some of the quotes that you brought are so comforting. The daughter, when you go to confession of this fountain of my mercy, the blood and water which came forth from my heart always flows down upon your soul and ennobles it. Every time you go to confession, immerse yourself entirely in my mercy with great trust so that I may pour the bounty of my grace upon your soul. It goes on, you know, all throughout and all throughout her diary, she talks about the mercy of God, which is way beyond. And you go, wow, maybe there's some hope for me. You know, and like you say, if you're down, read Sister Faustina's diary. And of course, Divine Mercy Sunday was declared by St. John. Well, we got two saints that didn't used to be saints, which is the way it works. John Paul II, before he was a saint, declared Divine Mercy Sunday and certainly led to the canonization of Sister Faustina. I've asked people, Polish priests, other people who know the history of Poland and the church quite well, if those two ever met. And the answer is they don't think so, that there's no evidence that they met. But what you wonder.
Wow.
There were times, I believe, when they were both in Poland at the same time, you know. And
Interesting. And one of the in one of the Divine Mercy prayers, but it's a word you run into a lot in the diary. Jesus describes his mercy as unfathomable,
right?
Endless, infinite, and that's something
unfathomable
that,
really means you can't understand it. Yeah.
Right. And so, and how his love is so pervasive and showing us how far he will go to connect with us. That if we turn towards him, then he will be there. And the passage you read is she prayed for that person to come to her for a purpose, and the Lord heard her and did it. And so reminding parents, and that's part of the purpose of God's Heart and Hands Ministry, because this is his work totally, and he's the one that created it. I'm just the one doing the footwork, is to remind parents, start there. And what you just did by opening it up spontaneously, something beautiful was there, much like we can do in the Bible, opening it up spontaneously. But this is more focused, so you've got general themes. And it's really helpful. And the Holy Spirit will guide you to that certain page and that certain piece or that certain sentence. And as things ramp up, so to speak, as the issues get more complex and more pervasive, going back to simplicity is returning our thoughts to the church, starting there, because there's this view that we have to deal with everything that comes in before. But no, actually, if we start with God first, then we'll know what to deal with or what to let in or to let none of it in. But as we move forward and helping children, we just came out of Lent, and whatever our aspirations were on Ash Wednesday and however it turned out on Easter Sunday for most of us, there's quite a difference. However, we did something. And if it was showing up to Mass without awareness and taking it in, take it. Those were seeds that the Lord planted seeds and move forward. And in looking for resources, because one of the best things about the internet is it's a tool that God uses. And how I was just speaking to someone earlier, said, I have no idea what that showed up on my algorithm. It was a great little documentary on St. Augustine, and it brought me to tears. I've never looked up St. Augustine, and this was just beautiful. And there's all kinds of resources for children, and there's Divine Mercy for young hearts. And it's put together by the Marian Fathers and the Immaculate Conception of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And one of the resources is a worksheet for children to understand how to behave in Mass. And it's very simple, and it's colorful, and it lets them put a happy face or a sad face to understand, so they can figure out, what am I supposed to do in Mass? And I see that as a great support for parents, because they need to be there spiritually, yet at the same time they're trying to train their children up in the way they should go, right? And that can be a lot, you know, because the children are coming in with a lot. It's not like it used to be, so they're coming in overstimulated, screens, videos, music, issues, and the kids are all ages. But making it really simple about their behavior in Mass, and it helps them, do you think, to have that very simple, they can figure out. And they actually do provide an answer sheet so if the kids can understand. Right. But they put a happy face on, or a sad face next to the things to do or not to do. And it's from to sing hymns, to wear picnic or beach type clothing, which is so interesting. I've heard multiple priests talk about that. And they don't
feel. Unless you live in Santa Cruz.
See there? Yes, yes. Well, California is, you know, we've got a lot of beach. We've got a lot of beach.
It's just kind of amusing to see that there. But I think we've all seen that once or twice in Mass, probably. Mm-hmm. Somebody in flip-flops and usually in a tourist area, you know.
Right.
And they didn't pack well.
Uh-huh. And it does happen. It does happen. But understand that it's an anomaly when we have. And we don't know their family story. Maybe they had to for whatever reason.
Right.
But that one thing opens up.
At least they're in Mass.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it opens up a bigger discussion, is how do we put forth our best coming to God? You know, how do we, and what we wear and the effort we put into getting ready is telling God, I'm going to give you the best I've got in the moment. And then also getting to Mass early to settle down a little bit.
There you go. On both sides of the equation is the word early.
Oh. Leave Mass early, get to Mass early.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
It's funny.
Uh huh.
You know, I mean,
it is.
It's almost like there's a. I say this to my kids all the time. You know, there's a plus and a minus. I mean, how great was inventing an airplane, and how long did it take man to realize that you could drop bombs out of an airplane?
Oh, good point.
You know, how great. Or cameras, and how long did it take before we had pornography?
Right.
You know, it's just.
Oh, it's a constant push-pull.
Push-pull, right. All kinds of great things. I mean, look at the advances in medicine that have just done things that we would consider to be miraculous. And then look at the drugs you take for a medical abortion.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like. That was medical research. That was people using their God-given talents to come up with this. You know, the same as somebody who came up with penicillin or came up with, you know, something that cures something.
Right.
You know, and you can use all these gifts for good, or you can use all these gifts for bad.
And that's something we're called to as parents, to really help our kids put that together, right? And to understand, and understanding how God can bring good out of anything, even when something is done that wasn't good or didn't look good, he will bring good out of that. And we're really called to, and I'd say it's a really difficult time for families right now, for parents to have to do that. And that's one way with my kids, because that coming, wearing beach clothing, especially when they got to be teenagers, because they just wanted to wear the slouchy jeans. And so it was an indirect way for me, without paragraphs, because I know they're not going to listen to it, just to say simply, we give God our best. If that's all you've got, and that for, like you mentioned, we're on vacation and you didn't pack it, that's one thing. And that did happen, actually, come to think of it. But in the moment, if we have it, when I reach for that hanger, we go for the one that's the best.
Sure.
And so that just formed them. Just very simple, indirect. I didn't have to deal with whatever everybody else was doing. It's like, this is what we do. Well, they're not doing this. I understand. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is what we do. And then move on. And it is a pretty persistent thing. It can be quite a role when you've got that going on. But going back to what God gave us in the divine mercy is so profound and will carry us through, because he's just looking for us to turn back towards him. And how beautiful that it's mercy. And he gave us the corporal works of mercy, excuse me, and the spiritual works of mercy. And so some of us, and maybe not as much as we wanted to on Ash Wednesday, but at some point we had more awareness through Lent of those that were less fortunate. And right. What did we do for them? Right. Did we just have that awareness? I know for me, it just brought me to that awareness. So when there's the person standing in the middle of the intersection with a sign, I had oranges. So I handed him an orange and offered him more. But one was enough. That's all he wanted. But that's what I had. And so Lent brought me into that mindset. So I'm trying to continue it moving forward. And how to be merciful. It's interesting, in paragraph 642 of the Diary of Divine Mercy, Jesus told St. Faustina, "You are to show mercy to your neighbors always and everywhere." There was no ambiguity.
Yeah, always and everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
That's comprehensive. That's not a when you feel like it and it's easy kind of thing.
There's no wiggle room in Scripture. And they aren't commands so much. You know, you can say, well, they're guidelines, they're suggestions. No, they're not. Command sounds, I don't necessarily like the word, because even though command, Ten Commandments, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all formed with love.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what's best for you. And so I guess command is okay because we have the Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes people react negatively to a command, like, oh, mm-hmm. I'm supposed to do this, whether like I just got ordered to do something by somebody.
And there's
at work,
a lot of that going on right now.
I don't want to.
I don't feel that doesn't feel right to me. I don't.
Yeah.
Yes.
But Scripture is faultless. Mm-hmm. And everything in there, Jesus says, you know, feed the hungry. He just says, feed the hungry, or welcome the stranger among you.
Mm-hmm.
Unqualified. He doesn't say, well, yeah, but it's okay if that stranger is ugly, or
right.
that stranger isn't dressed nice, or
right.
that stranger just kind of irritates you,
mm-hmm.
or a stranger isn't a citizen, or whatever it is.
Right.
Then it's okay to do whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm only mean if the stranger is friendly, good-looking,
right.
well-dressed, and you're going to get something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say that. He just says, welcome the stranger.
Right. And he even goes...
Clothe the naked, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. And he goes further in another place in the Bible saying even thieves are nice to thieves,
yeah.
something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're called to, and it is difficult.
And the other place in the Bible that really stands out, you know, people say, oh, he's just the best guy. He's so good to his friends. He's so good to his family. And that's all good. Mm-hmm. But it's like Jesus says the same thing, that everybody's nice to the people that are nice to them.
Right.
Everybody's a good friend to a good friend.
Mm-hmm.
What merit is there in that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the one who's a friend to somebody who's not friendly,
mm-hmm.
the one who's friendly to the outcast,
mm-hmm.
that's how you change the world. And that's what we're commanded to do. I mean, the thing that I always, you know, the list of, you know, clothe the naked, feed the hungry, mm-hmm. you know, visit the sick, you know, welcome the stranger, visit those in prison.
Mm-hmm.
That's not one that readily comes to mind.
Mm-mm.
It's another one of those things that tells me that's true. He really said that,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, you know, obviously you feed the hungry. Obviously you clothe the naked. Obviously you give shelter to, when
mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of thing. Visit people in prison? Really? Aren't they in prison for a reason?
He says just visit.
He doesn't say because they're innocent or
right.
because they've been wrongly convicted.
Mm-hmm.
He just says visit them.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say help them break out. He just says
right.
visit them, which was what... And you look at the great prison ministries we have. here in the diocese and throughout the Catholic Church. But also, even the state recognizes it. They have chaplains.
That's true.
That are state employees.
And it helps them transition, and it's quite successful.
Exactly.
To have that human contact, the community.
It's interesting that, as opposed to the state saying, well, separation of church and state, if you wanted to practice your religion, you shouldn't have broken the law, because now you're in the slammer, and we don't allow mass or confession or the Eucharist or the rosary or anything else in church. You should have thought of that before you got in trouble.
Right.
They don't say that. Mm-hmm. They say, here's a chaplain who will help you with your faith, because they have as much right to have their faith. Plus, it makes good sense. Someone, and the state recognized that, someone that has religious faith is much more likely not to reoffend than someone who doesn't. And I don't say that out of any righteousness or anything else.
Right.
It's just a fact. It's a yes. statistical fact.
Yeah, because they have two pieces. They have a community to come into wherever they land. There's a parish to help them. And they have a connection to the bigger picture of God. And when you take both of those away, an isolated human being with no one, it has a lot of problems and distress associated with it. And he calls us to help those that are in distress.
Right.
And that's powerful. And how does that come back to the family? How do we handle things? And so one of the things I see that was going on with families is the busyness plus the stress of everything we've been through the last 3 years is that opportunity to look your child in the eye and ask them what's going on in their world now, to really understand the pieces, not are you up on all of your assignments. Working at one of the local elementary schools and tutoring math and helping the kids in addition to the high schools. But in the elementary school, the guidance counselor commented that he was going to do a talk for one of the classes on suicide. And this was a middle school. So these kids ran it from 6th to 8th grade. And being very startled, but I was able to recover fast enough saying, why, with what you see? Because this is a front line that I don't have exposure to, but I want to understand. And he said, it's social media and lack of family dinners. And so it's the influence of the outside. It's vision into vistas that these kids have never had before this generation, roughly so. And then it's the family dinner. It's the parent across from them saying, so, you know, what's going on? What are you seeing? Probably about 10 years ago, one of my students, a high school student, private school, strong family, she was having a lot of anxiety. And they just couldn't figure out what was going on. She couldn't really give words to it. And one day she finally did. And she held up her phone. She said, Mom, this little device right here, I can see an actual beheading right now. And it just opened everything up for the parents. Now they understood, because we don't really understand what the phone is giving them insight into or vistas that we just don't get that. And it opened up a whole new perspective. And so bringing it back to the simplicity of family dinner, sit down with your kids, take that time. And it's not a big thing. It's a big thing, meaning it doesn't mean turn your life upside down for it and the family's life and sports and academics and everything else you've got going. But remember, that's where God wanted it.
Yep.
God in the center, the Last Supper, right?
Yep.
It's communing with people. It's the wedding feast. It's people gathering together. It's the community. And kids, especially as teenagers, because they're grappling with so much, they only open up when they really see that you're present with them.
Yeah.
And that's when the Holy Spirit can work through you, too. I asked one of my kids just a very... now I recognize the Holy Spirit was guiding me, a question of something in the past, and it opened up, it turned into a 2-hour conversation where she had been processing and recovering and grieving and so on and so forth. And it was amazing to me, but I had to be present to have that time and not worry about the to-do list, you know?
Well, and you know, I recognize, you know, now that, you know, we have teenagers who have had the audacity to become 20 years old, so they're not teenagers anymore. Somebody told me once they graduate from high school, they're not teenagers. And I go, well, wait a minute. Our 3 daughters graduated from high school, 4 daughters, I'm sorry, were
17, right?
When they graduated from high school. They've still got 2 more years of being a teenager, 19.
Yes,
you know,
right.
But obviously, family dinners became harder. Mm-hmm. But we try to find, okay, we're going to have a family lunch on a Saturday. We're going to have a family breakfast on a, a Tuesday, you know, even on.
So you saw the change and you found a stronghold and that would work.
Or we're going to take a family ride in the country. We're going to, you know, the critical thing is getting everybody together, or at least those that can. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they'll have jobs too.
Right.
They have school and they have jobs. Every one of them is in school, and every one of them has a job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, I mean, you know, we have daughter who, as we speak, is working a 1-to-10 shift at Safeway, and she just left class to get to Safeway. You know, she went to her class at City College, and then off she went to Safeway. Well, she's not going to make family dinner, you know, but there will be time where we can do things with her or her siblings that won't necessarily hit the dinner hour.
Right.
But we will all be together with that ability to discuss things, to share things, to, you know, what's the best thing that happened to you? We always like to start with what's the best thing that happened to you today, you know.
Right, right. And there is the option, especially when they're teenagers, they stay up later. When the last one gets home, everyone gather at the kitchen table for 10 minutes, just all to look each other in the eye, you know. And going, I love the idea of going for a drive together. So understanding that you have older teenagers and not knowing which point they had cell phones, but at some point there probably were multiple cell phones in the house. What did you do then when you went to get in the car and they've got their phone? Was it just assumed?
We fought over who got to drive.
So you just left the cell phones home for that time and went for a drive.
Yeah.
See, it sounds so simple, but we don't, and they're going to fight us. They do, they fight their parents on it.
Or you can say, okay, we're going to go to where? Williams or somewhere, and we'll have lunch at Grand Zellis, and you know, and for half an hour, you look at your phones. And we'll have a phone break.
Right. You see, but that's what we have to do. We have to do it that consciously.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of experience with that. And so that's why I wanted to ask you. We really do, and that brings up a thing about the community. We have to share those stories. We have to help each other. And then being around, you know, moms of young families and through church and so on, and there was some situation that came up, and the mom was feeling pretty overloaded. Oh, and I said, well, just – this is what a grandma told me, so here's my ideas.
Right.
It made all the difference for her. And that's that sense of community that God calls us to, right? Our parishes are in certain locations. They're not, you know, 45 miles apart. They're together, so in big groups that people can come together. And then within the parish, we develop ministries, which is another community. Right. And then going back to what you were saying about visiting people in prison, it's the community reaching out to them, helping them segue back into the community, and what a difference that makes. And so as parents, and then looking at the Divine Mercy as a resource to help to shore us up, when you were reading earlier paragraph 1602 about confession, a little further down, Jesus tells St. Faustina, tell souls that from this fount of mercy, souls draw graces solely with the vessel of trust. If their trust is great, there is no limit to my generosity. Wow.
And can you imagine a billionaire saying, there's no limit to my generosity? Holy cow.
Yeah.
Wow, what do I ask for here?
Right.
Well,
right.
This is God.
Uh-huh.
Who is, I think, a trillionaire.
Just a wee bit, yes, yes.
And if their trust is great, there is no limit to my generosity.
That's no limit.
That torrents of grace inundate humble souls. The proud remains always in poverty and misery because my grace turns away from them to humble souls.
That last line is really insightful when he says the proud remain always in poverty and misery. Wow. We were just talking about the trillionaires in poverty and misery. We don't equate the two. Well, his currency, if you will, is not our currency. Our currency is the greenback.
Right.
His is trust and mercy and love.
Yeah, and you know, we're made in the image and likeness of God. He's not the only merciful person or entity. He's telling us to be merciful.
Yes.
Which means we have that capability. You are to show mercy to your neighbors always and everywhere. Be merciful as your Father is merciful.
Yes.
Yeah, corporal works, spiritual works.
The parable of the tax collector and the Pharisee, wasn't that profound?
Yeah.
The wealthy and how the wealthy Pharisee was giving money in the temple. And the tax collector who was just feeling so, how would you say, inept, unqualified to be there, and stood off at a distance and would not even raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast and prayed, "O God, be merciful to me, a sinner," in Luke 18:13. And so he very much encapsulates who we are and where we are, because when you progress on the spiritual, your faith experience, a spiritual path, however you want to say it, your faith journey, you really get an eye of, yikes, wow, I'm not as shiny as I thought I was, so to speak. And then taking that back to the paragraph 1602 in the diary, when he said, "The proud remain always in poverty and misery," and what's the seven deadly sins, the worst is pride. So all of that encapsulated, all those pieces, it sounds complex, but all comes back to the simple piece: put God in the center, approach him with trust and expectation. Mm-hmm. That God, I know you're going to take care of me. What do you want me to do? And it's the what's written at the bottom of the divine mercy image, right? The center word is trust, which sounds oversimplified, but it's not, because how much do we really trust? How quickly do we get distressed,
right,
worried? And if we can honestly trust that, possibly like with the difficult neighbor, that example earlier when you were talking about it, is, can we trust that we're being used with that person to be kind, to be... I've had some very challenging neighbors. I'm no different than anybody else, but sometimes you get something that's over the top, but it's so much so that law enforcement should be called, but that just doesn't go well. I mean, long term. And how to love on them. Mm-hmm. How to love on them. I saw it starting to happen again with a neighbor. I immediately turned, grabbed fresh oranges someone had gave me, and went and knocked on their door. Because I wanted to share the abundance. I thought, you see it.
You're just the orange lady, aren't you?
I kind of am. Yeah. You get these things and you just want to share with everybody.
You walk around a bag of oranges.
But it's that when you start to see the enemy's influence, basically, the difficulty, and knowing enough stories from other folks, the neighbor situation, it's a tenuous one. It's a fragile one. So we have to treat it with extra care. This isn't somebody just driving by, so to speak. Is love on it right away. Okay, God, this happened. Show me what to do. And we just don't know where it's going to go.
The good advice before you take any action, especially one that is fraught with difficulties and you don't know what path to take, is, Lord, help me handle this. I can't figure it out. Help me handle this the way you want me to handle it. Help me say the right words. Whether it's with a family member, whether it's with a neighbor, whether it's with a coworker, or the boss, or somebody that works for you, you know, this is you can think of a million scenarios, but ones where it's difficult and it's maybe delicate, and you don't know what to say,
right?
You know, I mean, there are times where, okay, you know, someone doesn't share your faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know they're almost hostile for religion, and something's bad has happened to them, or they have something they really want to have happen, something they've applied for a job, or they're want to get into a college or whatever, and you want to say, "Well, I'll pray for you,"
right?
And at the same time, you don't want to sort of offend them and say, I don't need your thoughts and prayers right now.
They don't get the connection. Right.
Help me.
And they feel brushed off rather than seen.
Right. And so you don't want it to sound like just some stock answer.
Right.
Or something that isn't going to help them. But on the other side, you feel like witnessing isn't such a bad thing either. Like most of the time when somebody says, "Well, I'm having this problem," or "I'm going in for a test today for some physical malady, and I'm kind of worried," and you say, "I'll say some prayers." Almost universally, even if you know the person is not a person of faith or belief or whatever you want to say, they say thank you. They do. They appreciate that even, you know.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. Right, because they feel kind of hopeless and alone.
Yeah.
And I think
and they know that it comes from your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Not from a sense of righteousness, but it comes from your heart that, yeah, that you believe this, you know, and great, I'll take any help I can get.
Right,
you know?
Right, and we're called to, right? He said about being merciful, you are to show mercy. You are to show mercy to your neighbors always and everywhere. And we know somewhere else, multiple places in Scripture, we know by turning to him, he will guide us and so on and so forth. But where the rubber meets the road, if we've got nothing, if we can't pray, we haven't had that time to pray for them to know what they need or so on, and we, like you said, we know they're just going to brush it aside. In the moment, show mercy, whatever that looks like.
If you want to, convert people, it's become almost a dirty word, you know, conversion. Like, I'm going to convert you because you're wrong and I'm right. Because people
that's not love, but
people will
right.
react that way.
Right.
You know, like, well, I'm of this faith.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me that there's something wrong with me.
Right.
Because you're trying to convince me, and you use the restaurant example. No, I've just found this great restaurant.
Right. And I'm just sharing it with you.
I'm just sharing it with you. Right. I saw a great movie. I think you should see it. You know? But there is that sense that you are trying to help them. To me, the greatest conversion tool is mercy. Is living by example. I use my own. I've told this story before, but I use my own mother as an example. She grew up in North Dakota, where being a Lutheran is state law. Over 100 years ago, and she's a very faithful Lutheran. Went to Catholic nursing school. Went to nursing school at a Catholic, at the University of Mary, of all places, in Bismarck, the state capital, and she converted because she said those nuns had something. She said they never once tried to convert me, but with their actions, and she said they had something, and I wanted it.
Wow.
She said I knew they were onto the truth.
Wow.
Yeah, and wow, you know.
And we know it from Mother Teresa in the example, was it speak the gospel at all times, and if necessary, use words.
Use words, yeah.
And we know that, but that's more recent.
And that was
100 years ago.
You know, by example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at some point you go, wow, my neighbor is really such a decent person. I don't know that I would have reacted that way to that, or I would have been so forgiving, or
I've had people say that because I encounter some things as a kid and I saw things go on in the neighborhood that I have a very different approach, and people have said that, I can't believe you did that. And it's like, well, I know where it's going to go if I don't.
And at some point on Sunday morning, you're packing up to go to Tahoe, and you see your neighbor getting in their car, and you say, where are you going? He says, oh, I'm going to Mass, I'm Catholic. And you go, he's an awfully decent fellow.
Right, right.
Why am I going to Tahoe? Maybe I should be going to, maybe I should learn more about this Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
right.
I just think example in your everyday life, not just on Sunday morning, your example in your everyday life is, it may not be the most powerful conversion tool. Obviously, prayer is powerful too, but it is certainly a conversion tool. And it's on the flip side of that, very against conversion if you're a Sunday morning Catholic and the rest of the week they know you're cheating on your taxes bad to your employees and you're you know, like, oh yeah, he's a great Sunday morning Catholic, but that's not how he's living, or she is living their lives.
And I've encountered that criticism as well before, as if it only happens in the Catholic Church. We know it happens in
anywhere.
All of them.
Sure.
How And somehow it's a use it as a condemnation against the bigger picture. No, what was it Jesus said? It's for sinners. And the hospital is for those that are ill, and we're called to it. And there's not an easy solution, but I see what you're saying about that Sunday morning picture is in every moment in our interactions, we have a choice to make it a holy moment, as Matthew Kelly would say, or not.
Right.
And not over the top holy. You know, we don't have to look like we're walking on water, but are we showing mercy? Are we showing kindness? Are we showing humanness?
Right.
Because I think it's so profound, especially with everything that's going on right now in society, that mercy was given to us for that awareness to show mercy. If someone says the wrong thing, we're getting down to words, and someone can be just completely, what would you say, set aside for a word that didn't have the intent, that it may have been misspoken and so on. We're not even giving them the latitude, the mercy to correct and to just to ask. I heard you say this. Is that what you intended?
Well, you know, we've got that old expression, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Well, God gives us at least 70 times 7. I think it's more than that.
That's true.
You know, imagine if that was God's expression.
Mm-hmm.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I will never forgive you after the second time.
With that also goes, he says, we have to forgive them that often. But the piece in between is we're not to be doormats, but we're supposed to stand up like Christ did, which is to be loving, to be strong, to be peaceful in order to change things. But we have to go with that. But we are called to do that because at some point we will need that 70 times. We are blessed with that discomfort. He will make sure that we get that experience.
Exactly. I will tell you this, though. If I could walk on water in front of the neighbors, I'd do it.
Yeah, yeah. Say, come on to my church. Look what we learned how to do. But see, it's using.
I want to see that. It's funny because those are things from the Bible that people joke about.
All right.
You know, well, he thinks he walks on water, you know, or something.
Right.
And yet they're real. Mm-hmm. But even when you're saying it jokingly, People know you believe it.
Mm-hmm.
People know you believe it. We don't joke about Jesus walking on water. We joke about ourselves walking on water.
Right. Yes. Because there has to be some humor in there. It's not all serious and so on. But then showing mercy is when something does go awry, or if you're in a situation where it is awry, is showing up with a gift, if you will, because it's a showing of mercy. And can we start this over again?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd like to try again, you know, and try to understand each other. And we know that by having mercy towards understanding someone else's situation. I love the story you've told before of your kids delivering newspapers in the trailer park. And there was the woman that was lonely and she came out to check her mail every day.
Right.
And with that hope, there would be something there. And just her whole body that just kind of stayed upright, but just looked like it kind of melted the way you described it, the sadness in her. Is to understand where the other person is in order to, so we look at the world through their eyes.
Right.
And that's mercy, to not just stop at what we see, the evaluation, like you were saying earlier about how someone is dressed or everything else, but to show mercy and to see the human being. If we can't see Christ in them,
it's
at least
hard.
See the humanness.
I know my wife Shelley and I, we have a, it's not a rule, but it's just a sort of a saying between us, mm-hmm. And we'll remind each other of it frequently. You know, somebody, I don't know, cuts you off in traffic or is mm-hmm. rude in the grocery store or cuts in front of the line.
Right.
You always think of people taking something, you know.
Right.
Somebody who's just kind of mean and ornery.
Right.
And we say, before you judge them,
mm-hmm.
I mean, judge them as a person, like, there's nothing to do with that person.
Right.
You have to be willing to trade places with them completely.
Wow.
You're taking whatever job they have.
Right.
Whatever physical life malady events. They might have.
Right.
Who their kids are, who their spouse is, their whole.
Yeah.
You have to switch worlds with them.
Uh-huh.
Are you willing to do that?
Mm.
Oh, no, I don't think so. Well, then why are you judging them? Why are you? Because you're. I mean, first off, the Bible tells us, judge not.
Right.
But unless you're a judge. Unless you're on the
But it actually board. Does say, judge not.
Judge not.
And you're right. We don't know the bigger picture.
And it's like we don't. It's the old walk, you know, you haven't walked a mile in their shoes.
Right.
You don't know what somebody said it beautifully to me one time when I was having trouble with somebody or somebody had done something. And he said, you know, maybe it was just really hard that day for them to be them.
Oh, well said. Well
you know,
said.
Like, it's, you get up in the morning and you maybe you have some optimism. Maybe you, morning's your hard time. And you look in the mirror and you say, oh, man, it's still me. You know?
Still me. You know? Nobody else in that mirror.
Yeah, and I'm getting kind of tired of me, you know? Like I have these same problems. I have these same habits that I can't break.
So what do you do in that moment? Yes, you're seeing that I'm tired of being me. That's really well said.
Go back to bed. pull the sheets up over there.
Right. Okay, so for a couple minutes. And then what are we called to do?
You pray. You pray. You say, Lord, help me get through this day.
Right. Use me to help.
It doesn't matter. I mean, it's everybody says, you know, you can't take it with you and all that stuff. But there's not a billionaire in the world that's happier than or famous person, doesn't have to be billionaire, you know, who's happier than Sister Faustina with all her afflictions, or
right.
Mother Teresa, or John Paul II, or Pope Francis, or you start naming them.
What segment of humanity actually has the corner of the market on joy?
They don't.
Children.
Yeah, children. Yeah.
And they actually have nothing.
Yeah.
They're quite. And the less they have, the more they, you know, they don't need all the toys.
I remember there was a picture.
They're happy.
I think it was in National Geographic, and it was an aerial photo of a big city really run down some place in the world. I can't remember the country. And it wouldn't do it justice to name it anyway, but it was really a story about this country and all the problems it was having. But this aerial view, and you could see rubble, and you could see there was like the top of a rundown building, and it had barbed wire all around it. And within the roof of this building, there were a whole bunch of 7-year-olds playing soccer.
Oh.
And you could just say, you go, wow, they got kids in this terrible place, and they're playing soccer.
Laughing.
You know, all they needed was one ball.
One ball, right.
You know, I mean, I had the pleasure of emceeing a high school Hall of Fame dinner where they were inducting people from, you know, and this guy had been a great, great athlete in high school. And now was probably about 50, and they were inducting him into the hall. And he was a great baseball player, and he said, "Yeah, we were pretty poor growing up, but we would ball up about 4 pairs of socks, and then stuff newspaper in it, and keep forming it with our hand, and we could get it pretty hard. That was our baseball."
Oh,
and
my Lord!
My brothers and I started throwing that ball around, and we'd hit it with a stick, and you know, pretty soon you're in school where they actually have a real baseball and a real bat, and you got, you know, you play little league and you play. But he said that's where we learned it. We made do.
You know,
that's where we learned it. It was when we were 4, 5, 6 years old. That was our baseball.
Interesting.
The rules were the same. You know, and it was just telling that God will show you the way.
He will. He will. And that's he brought it back to that, and that's what we have to keep doing. And so, for God's heart and hands, for parents to see themselves as that, because there's this current thought: if they don't have the expensive little league, and they don't have the batting coach, they don't have the catching coach, and all this, they're not going to be. No, actually, start with God, and He will bring the people, and whatever your child is meant to do, He will provide the pieces for it. But it's when we count on His mercy, when we trust, because He said, "There's no limit to my generosity." But also, it's the vessel of our trust. We are the beginning with our trust, and He ask and seek, knock. We have to do the first part. So as parents, if we pray expectingly with that, well, you're going to do this, and you know the situation is here, show me what to do. So it's not a will you do this and this, show me what you want done, because you know the story of this child's life. And that's where the importance of parents, the critical, critical piece for families right now is parents putting God back in the center.
Yeah. Amen. Jane, always a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you. It was great to be here.
Thanks so much. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy Ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and long-standing support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Held high, such small sacrifice.